Also, I wanted to say, on my way up here today, I've got four kids, and the oldest one just started a job a month ago at Google, and I had no idea. You've got Google here with 1,200 employees down on 2nd Street, 10 floors of a big building overlooking the river. I got to have a tour. I got to have lunch. I had the scallops, seared scallops on the pureed cauliflower. But it's amazing. They've got like restaurants on every floor, coffee bars on every floor, and 1,200 people. I only saw one other person with a necktie on. I also saw only one other person that looked older than me, and both of those were the same person. And it was a guy also wearing a visitor's badge. So when you hear the talk on autonomous vehicles and how it's doom and gloom, I bet the Googles of the world figure that out within our lifetimes so that we're not doing car crash seminars maybe. I'll be retired. Quentin will be retired, but some of y'all will still be working. All right, so let's kick this off. There has been so much change in the medical research and literature over the last 12 years or so in TBI, so that now there are way more sophisticated ways for us to go about proving our cases. There's way more complexity in these cases, and the trick then, if you're going to try them, plaintiff or defense, is to figure out how to simplify these issues. So when we're talking about TBI deficits, we're commonly describing about 15 different deficits, a constellation of symptoms. The presence of four or more of those will lead a doctor to diagnose what's called post-concussion syndrome, four or more of these. If that syndrome persists for more than 6 months, they will usually call it persistent post-concussive syndrome. And so one of the first things you ought to be doing in your cases is trying to identify. I usually use a questionnaire to have my client identify what they can relate to. What did you have in the past? What are you still having? And then I'll kind of repeat that questionnaire over time and make sure that they're seeing their doctor as long as they're having these symptoms. So plaintiff or defense, if you've been doing car crash cases, and the reason we're talking about TBI at a car crash conference is because it is the number one cause of TBI. And it's not even a close. It's not even close. In the 18 to 65 age group, it is by far and away the leading cause of TBI. So most of your car crash cases, even if there's not a claim of TBI, you ought to at least be thinking about: might there be a claim of TBI? I don't spend a lot of time now talking about CTE, but I want to underscore a point here. If 220 out of 221 retired NFL players, after they die, when they autopsy their brains, if they find evidence of CTE, which they have, 220 out of 221 last time I looked, these are people that are having normal MRIs. They're not seeing this stuff on an MRI scan, but they're seeing it after they die, when they slice the brain really thin, they put it in a slide, they stain it, they look at it under a microscope, and it's clear that there are changes, objective changes in the brain. These are what's called tau protein deposits. But if you see it here, but you don't see it on MRI, then therein lies the rub, right? We're trying to figure out how to prove what's largely an invisible injury until after you die. So I'm going to talk to you about some of the ways that I go about doing that. If you're doing these cases, again, plaintiff or defense, watch this movie. It came out in late 2014, right before I picked a jury on a big brain injury case in Houston, so I got to use this movie as a prop to talk about, to condition my jury for things like insults or injuries that you have to your brain in your youth potentially can have devastating long-term effects on you as you age. If you see this movie, then you walk out of theater with that fixed in your head, that these things that happen to these football players in the prime of their life drastically altered their age 50s and 60s, and many of them didn't make it out of their 60s. All right, here's an image I use in my cases. What we're showing here is that the brain is free-floating within the skull, bathed in cerebrospinal fluid, kind of like the yolk in an egg, where the egg white is the cerebrospinal fluid. It's normally pretty well protected, but if you look at a skull model and you take the brain out, you'll see all these bony ridges inside of it. And so that makes the brain vulnerable, especially to rotational forces, which I'll talk about in a little bit, because the brain can get damaged, bruised, sheared, etc. What I'm showing you here is a brain cell known as an axon. And when it gets stretched, torn, or damaged, it will often lose its ability to send a signal down the brain cell. We're going to talk about that a little bit more as well. Now, I wanted to talk about this because it's a car crash seminar. Virtually every car crash involves rotational forces imparted upon the occupant, virtually everyone. So if you are on the plaintiff side of a case and you're trying to prove somebody has a TBI, you want to accentuate the fact that there were rotational forces involved, because the brain is exponentially more likely to get injured if there's rotation involved. If you take an egg, again, if you spin it enough, even without cracking open the egg and looking inside, you can rupture the yolk. The same thing can happen to the brain. It's just, it's going to be way more likely to get injured. I like to show this point because once you see it, you will never forget it. This is from 2003 American League playoff game, Boston Red Sox, Oakland A's. It's Johnny Damon and Damian Jackson colliding heads. They're both chasing a shallow fly ball. Here it is.